Hey guys, what if there was a simple tool that you can use in order to really understand what's going on for you emotionally or for your children? And not only in understanding what's going on, you can actually use that and do something to feel better. In this episode, I'm having a discussion that I waited to do since starting the podcast, and we're gonna show you a tool just like that and how you can learn more about that. So just stay tuned after the intro. It's gonna be great. Welcome to the Apparently Parent podcast. My name is Iran Katz, and I'm a clinical psychologist, a parenting counselor, and also a father. In this show, we combine the art of parenting with the science of psychology. So if you want to understand your children and yourself better, lead your family into calmer waters, and reach the end of the day with a smile on your face, you've come to the right place. I'm your host, Iran Katz. All right, so again, welcome to the 40th episode of the Apparently Parent podcast, and I'm really excited about this one because this is about a conversation that I've been waiting to have in this podcast for quite some time, actually since starting having this idea of having people on the podcast. And I'm going to introduce to you my guest today. She's a licensed clinical social worker, a certified psychoanalyst, and an AADP therapist, as I am, and you're going to know what AADP means in a second, and also a supervisor in AADP. She's also an author whose work was published in the New York Times, Time Magazine, Oprah.com, and more. She's the developer of the Change Triangle, and she wrote the award-winning self-help book, which is really great. It's called It's Not Always Depression, which is a title that I love. In her work, she takes the complex world of emotion and makes them easy to understand and work with in order to prevent and heal anxiety and depression so that you can enjoy greater well-being. And it is really my joy and honor to welcome her to this show. So everybody, please welcome Hilary Jacobs-Handel. Hilary, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Aaron. So great to talk to you.
Yeah,
thank you too. Talk to everybody out there and to talk about parenting, the hardest job in the world.
Yeah, but also a very fulfilling job, right?
It's very fulfilling, but not at every moment. It's a lot of moments of just getting through.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we have all sorts of fantasies about parenting, and the reality is quite different.
Yeah. So I think this is kind of one of the hallmarks of this conversation. I think the difference or in experience between what you think parenting will be like and what's it like eventually, and how it affects you as a parent and your children as well. First, I like to start in these times, and you know, I realize that I say in these times, it spans a long time. So in the year 2020, at least, I like to start with where you're from, maybe in a little bit about how things are over there right now.
Oh, thank you. Well, I am from the USA and born and raised in Manhattan, New York, New York.
Wow.
And things have been tough, you know, as we know, all over the world. And it's tough now because we have a general election coming up in 2 weeks. That's a very important election. So needless to say, there is a lot of anxiety.
When this episode is going to be published, it's going to be after the election. So we're going to know what happened. I hope we're going to know what happened, you know, with everything that's going on.
Yes, I hope so too. Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that it's a tumultuous time over there.
Yeah, it is. It's really hard. Yeah.
So I wanted to talk with you because you and I, we have something in common. We're both therapists, psychotherapists, and this is kind of how I learned about you and your work and how I connected with you. And I'm referring to our common interest in emotions and how emotions shape our experience. We both practice AADP, which is a short for Accelerated Experiential Dynamic Psychotherapy. And although this is not a podcast for psychologists or about psychology or about therapy, it's more about parenting. Maybe we could say a little bit about what AADP is, if you'd like to, because it's going to tie and move us towards talking about the change triangle, which is the focus of what I want to talk with you about.
Yes, certainly. Let me just make it relevant from the get-go.
Yeah.
And well, in a nutshell, AADP is a kind of psychotherapy that I recommend really for everybody. And it teaches us how to be with our emotions in a way that feels safe and manageable. And it does this by the therapist working very hard to create a very safe environment so people don't feel judged and you can really feel free to explore all the layers of that make us these complex, amazing humans. And we don't really get any type of this education in our schooling about kind of how the mind and body work when it comes to emotions. And, you know, one thing you and I share is we're both therapists and we're both parents, where what we don't share is that I didn't learn any of this until much later in my life. I began my parenting days without having any information about emotions and attachment. And it just wasn't mainstream. It just wasn't there. And I went back to social work school when I was 39 and my children were sort of just around that pre-adolescent area. And although I was a good mom, I had a wonderful mother myself. And so much of parenting is modeling. You know, when things go well, our parents teach us to be okay with our feelings and okay with who we are, flaws and all. But in my journey to become an AEDP therapist, I learned so much more that helped me be a better parent, both to myself in a way, how I related to my emotions, my relationship with my emotions changed, and my relationship to my children's emotions changed, and everything for the better. So I'm looking forward to sort of sharing some important aspects of emotions, because I think, and when I talk about emotions and I write about it, and then I'll be quiet. But what I want to say and clarify from the get-go is that we are not talking about permission to be emotional in a destructive, manipulative way and to have to wear emotions on our sleeve, as an expression we say in the United States, to act out, to behave badly. We're not talking about that. What we're talking about is how to make space for emotions without shaming ourselves for them, without buying into the myths that emotions are weak, or that emotions are bad, or that we should have control of our emotions because that's biologically impossible. They happen, and it's only after they get triggered that we have control over that. And that's because of where they're triggered in the brain and what their evolutionary purpose is. So our goal is to really learn ways to, without suppressing emotions, make space for emotions and simultaneously teach and model behaviors that are constructive, how to make good use of those emotions.
Yeah, so that's a really good way to put that. And as you talked about your own how you know when ADP entered your life and when the practice of therapy at large entered your life, I thought about my own little journey. So when I learned about AEDP and started to learn that method, I think I was a young dad. I guess I am still a young dad. I had one child and he was around 2 years old, which is kind of the age where emotions get really, you know, mm-hmm. the tides are high. And I now wonder how it affected my own parenting in ways that I, you know, I have no other point of reference in my own inner space. I only have the points of reference that I have from my own childhood or from people that I work with. But I do think that what I like about AEDP, and we don't need to go into the theory and the practice because that's not the scope of this podcast, but the way you structure it around emotions, it's profound for me because we are talking about what does it mean to have access to your own emotions and really being able to experience them fully, as we say, mm-hmm. and especially what I want to focus about, maybe you can talk a little bit about that, why it's so important. Why is it so important to have this full access to emotions, to be able to experience them completely?
Yeah, I mean, the way that I think of it is sort of, because I have a lot of science, I call myself kind of a science nerd, and I think of emotions now as physics. That basically, an emotion comes up and it releases and it mobilizes the body to move, right? That's the purpose, the evolutionary purpose of an emotion is to translate what's happening in the environment into action so that we can protect ourselves from things that are dangerous and that we want to move towards things that are good for us, in a nutshell, right? If we simplify it to just that. So when an emotion happens, and, you know, let's use anger as an example, particularly with parenting, it's such an important emotion for parents to understand so that they can model for their children healthy ways to deal with anger. And anger is something that is easy to sort of imagine from a physics perspective. So let's say your two-year-old, as you so mentioned, right? That's when they start to say no and they push back and they're beginning to become their own people. And if a parent doesn't kind of take kindly to hearing no from their child, maybe they were raised with a should that children should not say no to their parents. That may be sort of an old-fashioned idea, but I'm sure people still feel that way.
Yeah.
Then the child's pushback or no, or even yelling or even tantruming and saying, I hate you, will evoke anger. And that anger is going to create a lot of tension in the body, and it's going to release a lot of energy that if we don't know what to do with it, people pretty much squash it down and they use muscular tension, which we experience as anxiety. And so the way we block all those basic core emotions of anger, sadness, fear, disgust, joy, excitement, and sexual excitement, the ones that I target for the change triangle, because they're the ones that cause us the most trouble with this kind of energy experience. If we don't like what we feel because it makes us uncomfortable in our body, we try to shut it down, and we can shut it down in three basic ways. We can use anxiety and all this kind of tension to squash an emotion down, to bury it or suppress it or avoid it. We can use shame, right? We tell ourselves we're bad for having this emotion, and then we kind of tuck ourselves away in a turtle shell and feel badly about ourselves. But that emotion is still there. That energy is still there. And guilt is another way that we squash our emotions. So even if we push them down, that energy is still pushing up like steam in a closed pot. Is the way I imagine it.
Yeah.
And we have to take the lid off the top to release the pressure. And that's where all these techniques that we learn parents need for themselves to be able to release their anger in a way where they're not taking it out on their children, because that just doesn't help anything. That we know. That you may want to have a stern voice to convey, you know, to emphasize something that you feel strongly about, but to sort of yell and scream and shout and insult or hit, we now know that actually creates more problems in the long run and really is not great to do. So we want to try to figure out ways to channel our own angry energy, our own sad energy, our own fearful energy, and help our children be able to do the same. And the way adults and children will do that is going to be different, because children's brains are very, very different than adult brains, where we can think and be aware and have some space before we react. Whereas with children, it's harder.
Yeah, and this is something that I notice a lot when I work with parents, in one-on-one session, when I try to help them in their own parenting, this gap of understanding how your mind as an adult works and how the mind of your child, how the brain works. And they're different in several ways, but in predictable ways. When you get that understanding, it's really powerful. Those are some traps that I sometimes find myself falling, like trying to talk logically to my angry child or to my frustrated child and explain things in a way that, you know, why can't you just understand that? And then the coin drops and I realize that I'm talking nonsense, because he's so triggered right now and his brain doesn't work like mine, and also mine doesn't work. You know, I can think logically sometimes when I'm really angry or fearful. So this is something that I really think that parents really have to know. And you mentioned it that in your training and also in mine, and especially in our all education, we don't learn a lot about how the body and the mind work together and how emotions work. And I love that physics analogy. Even Freud talked about, you know, the energy as physics in the body. And this is something that is really lacking from education. I believe that in the age of my child, who's 7 years old, they have to learn how the body and the mind works in an age-appropriate way, and how they can start to manage would be a good word for that, maybe, to learn to recognize their emotions, to understand them, to realize that they're there, and then to work with them empathically and non-judgmentally and everything.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Exactly right. And I think they're doing that. I don't know if they're doing that in Israel more, but in the United States, there's a movement that's called trauma-informed education and trauma-informed schools, and it's coming. And really, the parents, I think they miss out on that. The parents and the teachers and people who work with children first need to educate themselves about emotions, because so much of effectively working with kids has to do with an adult being able to manage their emotions, not only for themselves and so that their behavior is appropriate with children, but also as a modeling. That's the most powerful way that, you know, it's not do what I say,
yeah,
not what I do. We really have to be able to walk the walk.
Yeah.
And know how to think about it.
Yeah. So I think this is a good place to talk about this concept that I mentioned a couple of times in this conversation, which is the change triangle, which is really explained beautifully and practically in your book, which is called It's Not Always Depression. And maybe you can take us to a walk through this triangle.
Sure. First, I'll just say a word about, you know, what it is. I basically, when I was learning AEDP, and it changed my life, and learning about emotions really immediately made me less anxious. And I had had a couple of depressions in my lifetime in my 30s, and they never came back after really just understanding that the roots of these symptoms had to do with welcoming and listening to my core emotions. And so I adapted, it became like a pet peeve. I noticed that I really thought, why should only therapists be getting this information? Why isn't it disseminated? Why didn't I learn it in high school for me? Yeah. They didn't have the MRI yet to understand so much about the brain. But it really, to me, is a public health tool. So I took this piece of AEDP, which is the change triangle now, and I just gave it a nickname, the change triangle. It used to be called the triangle, it still is the triangle of experience as an academic concept.
I'll just say to our listeners, the triangle of experience is an adaptation of it. It's basically a model of how emotions work.
Exactly.
And this is something tool. It's a simple tool that we therapists use when we mm-hmm. work with people to understand where they are, what emotion is prevalent. But what you did is actually you took it and you repurposed it to the general public, which is really what I liked about that book.
Yeah, so I made it simple and easy to understand. And it's really not only a tool to work with your emotions, it's a map to understand both when things go well with emotions, you know, why we end up feeling calmer and more confident. Mm-hmm. And when things go bad with emotions, where we end up, it's an upside down triangle. And for the listeners out there, if you're near a computer, just Google the change triangle and you'll see a diagram, because a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Exactly.
But it's an upside down triangle that you can almost imagine superimposed on your body, with the point of the triangle kind of being, around your belly button, maybe a little bit higher. And the point is where these basic survival emotions live, and they're all body-based. As we mentioned, their goal is to make us move in ways that are adaptive for survival. And then the top of the triangle, you can imagine sitting on top of your shoulders, because when we lift away from our core emotions, when we avoid our sadness and fear and anger and disgust and joy and sexual excitement because we are ashamed of it or feel guilty or it makes us anxious or overwhelmed, we kind of lift out of our bodies and we get stuck in our heads. Mm-hmm. And we develop all sorts of interesting defense mechanisms that are the symptoms that people come in with. Anything from addictions to not being able to tolerate any conflict or a tense conversation, to not being able to take in a compliment because it brings up positive emotions, which people struggle with just as much as the ones that we think of as the negative emotions, like anger and sadness and fear. And so it's really just a model to be less anxious and depressed, and to build more resilience and confidence and a calm mind and body. And that's pretty much the tool. And then it's a lifelong process to work it. But just the fundamental education is so important, because when we understand what creates chronic anxiety and chronic low self-esteem caused by too much shame, then parents have an opportunity to be aware, because it's so easy to, by accident or unwittingly, create anxiety and shame in our children when we don't understand, when we're operating from more old-fashioned ideas about emotions and all the myths that we had about emotions, which actually makes sense. You had to tell someone, you know, back in the olden days when you know, you were foraging for food and resources and people would just kill each other, because anger is what leads to destructive acting out, like hurting each other. And so that's not what we're doing here at all. We're trying to actually, in modern times, when we have time to self-actualize and think about how we feel, we now have to be able to use anger in constructive ways, like putting it, you know, taking that energy, putting it in your backbone and using it to assert kindly to our children, right? It's like, you can't hit mommy, even though that might be fun or, you know, or relieving or make you feel better for a moment. We don't hit people, but you can take this doll and you can pretend it's me, or you can pretend it's your sister or brother, and we can have fun beating the hell out of the doll. Yeah. So you're using fantasy and imagination and play to work with emotions. But if the parent themselves is triggered by the emotions, for example, there might be some fathers or even mothers that when their little boy, if you have a very sensitive little boy that cries a lot, that it brings up something in the father and his own relationship with his own tender emotions, that little boys learn are not okay, that they're weak, that it's not okay to feel sadness, that it's not okay to admit to being afraid. And that has been so destructive for males over time. I think it's what's responsible for suicidality, depression, anxiety, and aggression, frankly. Like, why should we have so much fighting? I think it has to do with the way that we manage anger and not having tools to do that. So the book, It's Not Always Depression, I've been told by many people, really should be in the parenting section of the bookstore, because you have to understand emotions to, one, break the intergenerational transfer of trauma, you know, that we might have experienced with our parents and grandparents, and two, to help our children, that we stay calm enough and understand to help our children manage their own emotions. So there's every reason in the world to understand some basic emotion education. I can't think of one negative to at least understanding it. It doesn't mean you have to go to therapy, but just know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally agree that this is a book that it's not reading as a parenting book or for parents. And I think it's really helpful even for, you know, non-parents or not for non-parenting related issues. However, for the scope of this discussion, I truly believe that when parents understand how emotions work and the change triangle, and I really encourage you listeners that even if you can do it right now, Google the change triangle and you'll see exactly what we're talking about. When you understand how these things work, you have a better grasp of a thought about how you can conduct yourself when your children are angry or sad, or when you are now. And just want to iterate or stress something that you said, Hilary. It's not like when you learn that, then you're perfectly good to go. This is a lifelong process that you perfect, but you get better with time. You get more adept at understanding where you are, or what I believe that parents can try to, in their mind, superimpose the triangle both on themselves and on their children and create some kind of communication, either internally between themselves, or even with the children when maybe they're old enough and you can teach your children about how emotions work and help your children try to, as you, I think this is how you call it, work the triangle.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Work the change triangle.
Yeah. So
where are you on the change triangle today? Right. So we can locate where we are without judging ourselves, always being curious and compassionate in ourselves, right? That's another sort of overlay of practicing and really trying to even be curious and compassionate in our children about what our children are experiencing beyond the top layer of the bad behavior. Mm-hmm. Or the bad mood, right? So a child might try to push you away in a way because they don't know how to handle their emotions. They need you, but they also want to push you away. And maybe they slam some doors, or maybe they break something, or maybe they cut up your favorite t-shirt. And instead of just taking the bait and going nuts and saying, you know, what did you do? You know, you may want to say, are you okay? Are you upset about something? Yeah. What's going on here? Why did you want to do that? You know, in a sweet, loving tone. And it might not always work, but it's a good empathic first try for sure.
Yeah, I think this is something that I talk a lot about. But I think sometimes we can help it. As you said, the emotions will happen. The question is what you do with them. So even if you get triggered, if you get really angry, it's really about what you do after that. Now, it's okay to, a couple of episodes ago, I talked about self-compassion, for example. Now, especially in these stressful days, we here in Israel, at the time of this recording, I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago, we finished a second lockdown of a couple of weeks during the holidays, being with the kids and with no school. So, you know, parents, and I know it myself, we can get really triggered. Now, We always want to avoid, and we always want to enjoy as harmonious family life as possible. But sometimes we flip the lid, you know, and it's okay if it happens as long as you know what to do and you know how to calm yourself down, conduct yourself, being compassionate towards yourself and kind of debrief that with your child and help your child work with that, because you're the responsible adult, you're the attachment figure here. And I think having the knowledge of emotions and experience and working the change triangle can help you do that, can help you be more aware. And developing this awareness is a big part of what you suggest in the book, either through mindfulness skills and practice and other things that help you gain more awareness towards your bodily sensations and how they tie up to emotions. Am I correct?
Exactly. And even going further than mindfulness, just more tools for actually what to do with those emotions that are really in the body, right? That's the big shift here, is that people think emotions are happening in the head and the mind, but they're sensations in the body that we can begin to name. And so one of the things, you know, that we ask our people in AEDP therapy, if somebody says to me, you know, I feel really sad, one question might be, well, what in your body tells you, how do you know you feel sad, right? Because we're helping people build this expanding awareness of emotions, and we have to process them in the body. So you might as well, from the get-go, bring someone's attention. And so as a parent, even as a person, as a partner, as a friend, as a human being, now when I feel myself get stressed, or I feel that sort of jolt into, you know, I was balanced and calm, and now something happened in my life that has thrown me off balance and I'm now feeling emotional, I used to kind of go up into my head and just kind of obsess and ruminate about it. Now I go down. I bring my attention down. I scan my body from head to toe, and I just notice what's happening, and I try to listen a little bit, spend some time with myself, and what's going on here. Not only am I angry, but is this a familiar anger? What's it bringing up from my past? And what's nice about AEDP therapy, is that we're giving people tools that they can then take out and use in their relationships and in their lives, so that it's really a translatable skill on being able to work with emotions, and even in marriages, partnerships, to be able to have a richer conversation than the same old fight.
Yeah.
At some point when you notice, okay, here we are again, even with your kid, maybe a teenager's can understand the change triangle. Yeah. You know, okay, we keep having this same fight. I think that means we need to understand each other more. There must be a miscommunication because we don't want to be fighting. And yet here we are again. So, you know, where are we on the same page, and what do we agree on? And then let's see where we diverge, where we lose our common ground, and make sure we're defining our words correctly. What does this mean to you? What does this mean to me? And trying to get back on understanding each other and being understood, and the emotion piece. Because even if people don't think they're having emotions, I mean, it's one thing if you're calm and that's nice, but what people don't realize is that any kind of behavior we have is always affected by emotions. And it's like a puppeteer behind the scenes. We don't even know what's happening to us until somebody says, well, what's happening in your body now? Oh, I'm so tense. Okay. So when we know there's tension, we know there's emotions. Yeah. And then our job is to go under that tension and see what we can find. Again, not to fix, not to judge, but simply to validate and name. And so much good comes from just that. And it certainly is a prerequisite to better problem solving. When we know our thoughts and beliefs and values and the emotions that are triggered when somebody pushes back against those, then we're better prepared to be more empathic to ourselves and into our children.
Yeah, I think this is really a lot about being more open towards ourselves first, and then towards whomever we are talking with. So whether it's between the parent and the child, or the parents themselves, you know, as partners in life, and or even, and I do believe that this is something that it's true for older children, to help them in their own relationships between them, between siblings or between friends. And it's really about being, changing the conversation, as you said, not having the same fight over and over again, because when you're stuck in your own position, and usually it's, you know, I don't expect my children to change positions because they're kids. They don't have the knowledge and capacity and the responsibility to see the bigger picture and to look down the road of life, like I try to do, thinking about building an enduring relationship with them. So, and how they will remember those moments and how they will become as adults. So this is something that I need to think about, and I need sometimes to change positions while maintaining my own values and my own, authority. But when we approach that from an open space in an accepting space and a non-judgmental space, it's the whole conversation changes. And this is something that is really, I think, understanding emotions and knowing how to work with them really helps you with that.
And absolutely. Absolutely. And also, you know, because as we talked about before we started recording this, is we're playing the long game. Mm-hmm. But you got to, I think, keep in mind, what's your goal? If the goal is to have a nice relationship with your children one day, with adult children, because I meet so many people that they have, their adult children don't talk to them.
Yeah.
They're so angry. And the parents dig into self-righteous indignation. They refuse to say, what did I do? Like, it's not easy.
Yeah.
To ask that question, even of our teenagers, when, you know, they say, you know, you suck. And it's like, okay, tell me, what did I do? You look pretty angry. I must have done something to really anger you. Tell me, I want to know. And to sit there with an open heart and to listen about how bad we are takes a tremendous amount of skill and practice at not getting defensive. And that's what the change triangle teaches people to do. To just be able to hear as you breathe and calm yourself and know that it, that doesn't give someone, just listening doesn't say, I agree, or I think you're right, but it solidifies a connection and a trust that is just, will last a lifetime.
Yeah.
And then you listen, and sometimes you'll say, sorry. Sometimes you'll say, oh, well, I see it a little differently. Do you want to know how I see it? It's a lot. I'm sure that sometimes the kids will say, no, I don't care. It's not about you. Okay. I get it. Where do we go from here? What should we do now?
Yeah. But the ability to have this kind of conversation and model that to your child is amazing. It's big. It's really big.
It's a gift. Yeah.
Because even if you don't quote unquote solve the problem.
Right. Right. And not to think about solving all the time, but just understanding and making an invitation to listen and to be and to understand solves, that in itself is so healing. Yeah. You know, just imagine for the people listening, you know, when you tell your partner that you're angry or that something isn't going well or that you want something to change, and the difference between if they get their backup and they get defensive and it becomes all about them and you hurt their feelings versus saying, oh, thank you for telling me. Tell me more. Let's figure this out. I care about that, you know, and it wasn't on purpose and it wasn't my intent, but that just is human. That happens. You know, that's the sort of what to hold in mind is that humans are very flawed and emotions are flawed systems. And in a way we've evolved as humans faster than our emotional mind.
Yeah.
And that's why we need skills. We really need skills and tools to be able to know our emotions and then to bring back in rational thought, and the two together make for a whole compass for how to live well.
Yeah. So, and one of those tools, or at least one of my favorite tools, is the change triangle. And this is a good place to ask where people can learn more about the change triangle and your book and your work.
Oh, thank you so much for asking, Aaron. I mean, because I've become so passionate about educating people on emotions, I have mostly just a ton of free resources that I have on my website, which is hilaryjacobshendel.com or thechangetriangle.com. You get there both ways. And I have a blog that for people listening that are interested in emotions, if you join my blog, once a month only I send out a new article. I don't spam and send a lot of emails because I don't like when people do that to me. Mm-hmm. And that way we have a direct connection. You can email me requests for things and questions, and I always like to get back to people. And then there's the Change Triangle YouTube channel, where I have videos sometimes that are experiential that help you ground and breathe, that help you get in touch with your body. I'm about to produce a new video on when you're having trouble crying, but you know you're sad, just a self-help exercise to help you be able to cry. That was something I struggled with in my earlier life because, again, I didn't know about sadness. I just tried to push it away, and then I was just anxious. Instead, you know, if somebody died or there was a funeral or a loss of some kind, I got anxious. I just skipped over the sadness part. And so I have resources there. And then the book, which is from Random House in the US and Penguin UK, I think you can order wherever you order your books online or in bookstores. It's everywhere. Yeah, and it's in many different languages. Right, and I wrote it. I just wanted to let people know there's no jargon or psychobabble, even though it's very psychological, but I really wrote it to be like a beach read. I wanted it to be a page turner. And so it's mostly stories of how people go from disconnected and anxious and depressed states to feeling, to processing, going through their emotions as opposed to avoiding them and ending up in calm and confident and courageous and clear states that we all want to spend more time in, right? We can't spend all our time in there, but it's good to have a process to get back there. And then there's gentle exercises in the book too. So the book is the whole enchilada. It's like everything you needed to know about emotions, but was afraid to ask.
Yeah. And I just want to, you know, to kind of repeat and stress what you said, because for some of my listeners, maybe this conversation can sound a little bit technical, like what does it mean to work the change triangle and to notice where you are. But this book is not technical, and it's really not, it's non-jargon. It's not for, it's for everybody, and it really uses a lot of examples, which is one of the things I love about it, because you can really, think how it applies to your own life and unique situation, and learn from that. And you offer some really great exercises, so it's something that's really applicable. And I will put all the links that you mentioned to your blog in the YouTube channel, and for the book itself in the show notes also of the of this episode. So it's going to be on apparentlyparent.com/40, so people can get to that really easily.
That's wonderful. And one thing I just wanted to just say about the what you were saying about how it's for everyone. I wrote the book for non-therapists, although a lot of therapists read it. I really wrote it for everybody, probably around 16 years of up. And then the beautiful thing about emotions is it's universal. We all mm-hmm. have the same emotions, men, women, every gender in between, every culture, every political party. It's what every color, it's why we those people who can be in touch with that feel we are all connected.
Yeah.
And we have to raise the next generation of people that know that we have more the same as humans than any of our differences. We all are frightened, and we get sad when there's loss, and we get happy when there's wonderful things happening to us. And I hope people will check out some of the resources if they're interested in learning more about themselves.
Yeah, me too. And I encourage you guys to do that. So we're about to end. And there's one question that I always ask at the end of these conversations, kind of a universal one.
Yeah.
And I think that as an ADP therapist, you will get that question really quickly. So if you could have the chance to go back in time and meet Hillary before she became a mom for the first time, and you know, maybe sit down for a coffee or whatever she liked to drink back then, mm-hmm. what would you like to tell her or let her know? Like one or two things.
Yes. No, I really know exactly what it is. And it's related to dealing with emotions that came up because I didn't know this. And I don't know why I didn't know this really, but I didn't. It's like I missed that meeting. Is that every child is more unique. They're their own person. And even though we sort of, at least I had the feeling that I was supposed to mold my children, that I could actually shape if they were good students or if they liked school or if they liked sports or if they wanted to play music or, you know, we're all trying to make our kids sort of be great in a way. And I would say, don't worry about that. Just be loving and kind and really try to see them, right? If they are different than you, that's just the genetic lottery. In other words, if you have a kid that's like you, it's much easier because you recognize each other. And I was always very into school and I liked getting good grades. And so I have one kid that was sort of in that vein and we could talk about those things. But I had another kid that was an artist. And who struggled more, I think, as a result of my getting divorced and moved, things that happened when she was about 2 years old, which are just anxiety provoking. And I think when she started to struggle in school, I just whipped into action to solve the problem. Like there was something that she that needed help and sent her to a therapist and put her on antidepressants and all these things. And I wrote an article about this because I just started to look around all the type of kids that are kind of sent into therapy and given medication because they're not fitting a mold that the parent needs them to fit. That was the Salon article called, it was in salon.com about kids. I forgot the name of it now. But maybe I'll send it to you for the links below.
Right.
So I would really just say be one step behind your child. And if something isn't going in the way that you think is okay, before you go nuts about it, really kind of slow down and just think maybe this kid is just different and has different talents and that they're trying to fit them into the wrong box, and ask them, you know, how you can support them. Don't figure it out before you talk to them. Really try to get get them involved in what they need and support that. It may be a different type of learning in school. It may be that there's too much chaos, that they have too many structured activities. It may be that they're upset about something that they don't know that they can talk to you about. So it's important to let kids know that you'll listen and you won't give them your opinion if they don't want, and that they can tell you that. So really just being more tuned in. And I thought I was so tuned in, and I really wasn't.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Ethan. Thank you for sharing that with us. And I just really liked how you put that, because it really resonated with me, because I think me and my boy, we have a lot in common, as kind of he's in second grade right now. So I can see his affinity towards math, and he's really curious and likes to study, but he also has his own struggles that he really reminds me of myself in those times. And it's for in one way it's good, because I really get him, and I also tell him that I know what he feels like when he's frustrated, but it demands some work from me of stepping a little bit to the side and not assuming that his experience is exactly as mine. And it's always this kind of dance. Yes. And his younger sister, who's 3 years old, is a really different kind of soul. She's really assertive, and she knows what she wants, and she's a really go-getter and challenging in many ways. Yeah. And she provokes awe in many ways in me. So yeah. It's really interesting to have this kind of dance.
It is, and how every kid is so different. Yeah. And it's just the luck of the draw, you know.
Yeah. This is why I like to, this is why I like to say that they both are the best parenting teachers that I will ever have.
Oh, I totally agree. I have grown and stretched in so many ways from my children, and I'm so appreciative and humbled. They've taught me so much.
So this has been a really, really enjoyable conversation for me. I really thank you for being with us today. Mm-hmm. And I hope our listeners we'll want to learn more about emotions, because I think this is something that we all have to know more about and to really know how to work with. And I'll just say again that I will put all the links in the show notes on apparentlyparent.com/40. And I really encourage you to check out Hillary's blog, because it's a treasure trove of information, and the book as well. And I really enjoy your YouTube channel as well. You really put out a lot of good stuff into the world. So I really appreciate you for that. And
thank you so much for having me, Aaron.
Yeah, my pleasure. And as I've said, this episode is going to be published after the US election. So I hope that whatever you want to happen will happen. And whatever that may be. And
yes. Yeah, that I'm for world love and world peace, and we're all together as earthlings. And so you probably know where I stand.
Yeah. So I'm with you with that. And that's it for today. So again, thank you. All right. So that was my discussion with Hillary Jacobs Handel. I really hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I really waited for her to be on the show. I wanted to have her since starting the podcast. And I really think that you should grab a copy of her book. It's Not Always Depression. It's really great. It really puts things in perspective and in order, and really helpful in practical ways. I'm going to put a link for getting that book on the show notes. So go to apparentlyparent.com/40. And that's that for today. I want to thank you for listening to this episode. And if you want to have more of that, join my group on Facebook. It's called Navigating Parenting. And you can get to that group from the show notes, or just type in your browser apparentlyparent.com/Facebook. All right. And on next week, there's going to be a new show on Thursday. So stay tuned. Subscribe if you haven't done so yet. And I will see you then. Have a wonderful week in between. Bye-bye.